This presentation was given at the 2017 Oktoberfest Conference at the Orangeburg German Swiss Genealogy Society. Rights to the content of the presentation remain with the speaker.
Catfish, mammy's good gumbo. I got the rambling fever, said goodbye to Ma and Pa. Cross that old Red River, this is what I saw. I saw miles, miles of Texas, all the stars up in the sky.
Gone to Texas was a phrase used by Americans immigrating to Texas in the 1800s. Since this was often to escape debt, the phrase was also used as a disparaging comment on folks of little worth. GTT was often written on the doors of abandoned houses, or sometimes posted as a sign on fences to indicate where the previous inhabitants had gone. My name is Jim Rickenbacker. I was born in Orangeburg. I grew up in Cameron. I graduated from Clemson. I married my Orangeburg sweetheart. And in 1965, we were gone to Texas. We have two children, four grandchildren, all native Texans. As the song says, gonna live there till we die. This presentation is about a much earlier migration to Texas. A number of years ago, the late Dorothy Heener gave me a large packet of information on the Heener family. Included in that packet was a family story that stated the following. Shortly after the Civil War, seven families from the Orangeburg area left for Texas. These families traveled by ship and arrived in Indianola, Texas, about 1867. They traveled inland by covered wagon and finally settled in Gonzales County, Texas. The more I thought about this story, it raised some interesting questions. Of course, the first question was, why did they leave? Why did they leave their homes in Orangeburg? Why did they decide to go to Texas? Why did they specifically pick Gonzales County? Why did they travel by ship? Why not travel overland? Wasn't ship travel expensive? Did they really use covered wagons? And finally, why Indianola instead of Galveston? Why did they land in Indianola? Was Indianola a real port? Let's take a look at these questions in reverse order. Here's a satellite image of Indianola, Texas today. As you can see, there's very little there. We have a bare bones marina here at the end of the point, with a bait shop, a boat launch ramp, and a little bit of protected dock space for small boats. There are a few bay houses right along the shore of the bay. They're mostly in use by weekend fishermen. There's little or no sign that anything of any significance had ever been here. Here's a modern map showing part of the coast of Texas. On this map, we can note that Old Indianola is located on the coast about halfway between the city of Corpus Christi and the town of Galveston. We can also see in this modern map the major cities of Houston and San Antonio. You also note that we had to put a map pin in to show the location of Old Indianola, since today it's far too small to be shown on a map of this scale. Now, of course, this map would have looked considerably different in 1870, which is the time period we're going to be talking about. At that time, the relative populations of these towns would have been quite different, and we'll get to that in a minute. But first, I want you to notice the blue line going up through here. That blue line extending from Corpus Christi over to the west is the Nueces River. Now, before about 1848, the Mexican government claimed that the Nueces River was the border between Mexico and the United States. Of course, the United States disputed that, and we claimed that the Rio Grande was the border. Now, we settled the whole thing in the Mexican-American War about 1848. But before that time, all of this area in here, including Corpus Christi, was known as the disputed area and was mainly a haven for bandits and other ne'er-do-wells. Anyhow, enough of that. Let's take a look at what these cities might have looked like in 1870. Here's a table showing how the population of these cities has changed from 1870 up until today. In 1870, Galveston was the premier city. It had a population of 14,000 people. San Antonio was next with a population of about 12,000. Houston was next with a population of 9,000. Indianola was next with a population of over 5,000 people. And finally, there was Corpus Christi with a population of 2,000. Now, this population of 2,000 in 1870 was a dramatic increase from Corpus Christi, because in 1860, its population was only 175. One of the reasons for this dramatic increase in population, if you remember, Corpus Christi was part of the disputed area with Mexico up until the end of the Mexican-American War. Up until the end of that war, Corpus Christi was nothing but a trading post. So it has had a dramatic increase in population since then. But enough about Corpus Christi. Let's talk about the history of Indianola. Indianola was first used as a port in 1844 when a shipload of German immigrants were landed on the beach. Most of these immigrants, of course, went on in to settle in central Texas, but a few of them stayed at the landing point and began to serve further shiploads of immigrants as they came in. Now, this continued as a port serving primarily immigrants until 1853, when it was established as a port to serve the Morgan Lines. Now, the Morgan Lines were sort of interesting. Charles Morgan, the owner, was a New Yorker. He was also a business rival of Cornelius Vanderbilt. His main business interests were sea and rail transportation in and around the Gulf of Mexico. Now, his ships served ports in New York, Charleston, New Orleans, Galveston, Indianola, and other Gulf ports, including some in Mexico. His long-range route was New York, Charleston, New Orleans, but New Orleans was his primary Gulf terminal, and from New Orleans he served Galveston, Indianola, and the other Gulf ports. Now, for a time, in its heyday, Indianola rivaled Galveston as the major Texas port. Here's a picture of Indianola, Texas from 1860. This is a painting that was done from the masthead of a ship anchored out in the harbor. Here we can note the Morgan Lines Pier, with its ticket house out on the end of the pier. We can look at a second pier here, which it served other shipping lines. We had a courthouse here, and you can see that the whole shore is pretty much lined with the town. This picture, by the way, pretty much duplicates the satellite imagery that I showed you before. So you can see that in 1860, Indianola was quite a substantial settlement. Here's a photograph of the main street of Indianola in 1875. Once again, we see a fairly substantial town. We note a buckboard here. We note what looks like a stagecoach here. And oh, by the way, 1, 2, 3 covered wagons. Yes, they did use covered wagons. So, if Indianola rivaled Galveston as the major Texas port during its heyday, what happened? Well, the first thing that happened was that Indianola was partially destroyed by a hurricane in 1875. However, the inhabitants rallied and rebuilt the town. Unfortunately, the end was already near. What happened was that shipping began to decline as the railroads pushed west. And in 1877, the Galveston, Harrisburg, and San Antonio Railroad reached San Antonio. This was just about the end for Indianola. The final end was when the town was destroyed by a second hurricane in 1886. The few surviving houses were dismantled and moved to Quiro and Victoria, and the town was abandoned. Here's a picture of the remains of Indianola after the hurricane of 1886. We can see over here the remains of the Morgan Lines Pier with its ticket house on the end, and we can see on this side the remains of the second pier. Rest in peace, Indianola. Our final transportation-related question was, why did they travel by sea? Why not by land? Well, the answer is that travel by land would have been almost impossible. First of all, travel by wagon was not really an option, would have taken a very long time and would have been very arduous. Earlier, before the war, travel by rail would have been an option, but by the end of the war, the southern railroads were mostly destroyed. It turns out that travel by sea was really the only remaining option. And several things conspired to make this a very good option. The main thing was that the capture of New Orleans in 1862 brought a lot of northern shipping to the city, both to supply the city and to support the war effort. So we had both public and private carriers running from the East Coast and the North into New Orleans. At the end of the war, a lot of extra carriers jumped into these routes to serve the, quote, war-torn area. The result was that at the end of the war, routes from the East Coast to New Orleans were just flat glutted with public and private carriers. As you can expect, fares plummeted. Fares became very cheap. And finally, from New Orleans to Indianola and other Gulf ports, the Morgan Lines provided affordable sailings, and they provided 3 times a week service from New Orleans to Indianola. Right, let's take a quick look at our questions. Once again, we'll go in reverse order. First, why Indianola instead of Galveston? Because Indianola rivaled Galveston as the major Texas port during this time frame. It was also the closest port to Central Texas. Yes, they really did use covered wagons. Why did they travel by sea? Because there was a lot of post-war competition and the fares were very affordable. It was the easiest way to go. And we leave our final remaining question, still unsettled. Why did they leave? And why did they pick Gonzales County, Texas? To begin to answer this question, we need to look at our immigrant families. There were 7 families totaling 32 individuals in our group of migrants. The first family was that of Independence Green Theodore Bobo, often called Penny for obvious reasons. Kenny's wife, Mary Ann Heener, my great-great-aunt, and four children. The second family was that of William Barnett Heener, my great-great-uncle, and also a brother of Mary Ann Heener, his wife, Elifar Bobo, sister of Penny Bobo, and their five children. Another family was that of Joshua Stroman, his wife, Almelicent Bobo, another sister of Penny Bobo, and their eight children. And then we had Barbara Ann Mary Bobo. She was either a Shule wife or a Shule widow, because the record seems a little bit uncertain as to whether her husband had died or just she simply left him. Along with Barbara were Sophronia Bobo, who was a Shule widow, and one child of hers. And then the final, another family was James Bear, his wife, Emerilda Shuler, who was the daughter of Barbara Bobo, and one child. And finally, there was the seventh family was young Shuler Bobo, his wife, Rebecca Stroman, and one child. Now, according to family lore, the Shuler Bobo family did not travel with the rest of them, but came slightly later. We're fairly certain that they arrived about year end 1867. For on 23rd November 1869, J.G. Bear and W.B. Heener registered to vote in Gonzales County, at that time stating that they had been in the state for 23 months and 2 years respectively. Further confirming the arrival time is the 1870 census for Gonzales County, Texas, where we find the young Bobo family, the J.G. Bear family, the Barbara Shuler, Sophronia Shuler family, and the Joshua Stroman families. In the 1870 census from Live Oak County, Texas, we find the Penny Bobo family. Let's see where they settled. Most of our migrants settled in Gonzales County, right around Leesville. They arrived in Indianola and probably went up what was called the Old Cart Road up into Gonzales County and then up toward Leesville. Now, the Penny Bobo family, by contrast, and we don't know exactly why, did not decide to settle in Gonzales County. Penny Bobo settled over in Live Oak County around Oakville. And if you remember what I showed earlier, the Nueces River coming up through here, you can see that about half of Live Oak County was in what was once the disputed area with Mexico. And we'll see some of the impact of that when we take a look on the next slide at the county comparisons. This is the county comparison of where they came from, Orangeburg County, and where they went, Gonzales County and Live Oak counties in Texas. As we all know, Orangeburg County was greatly affected by the Civil War. And by the time General Sherman got through with his march, the county was basically a mess. We're not sure what the 1870 population of Orangeburg County was because the census is only a partial count. But if we assume that the population was similar to that in 1860, we can see that it had a population density of about 17 inhabitants per square mile. Now, Gonzales County was more sparsely settled than Orangeburg County, and only about 8 inhabitants per square mile in Gonzales County. Live Oak County, of course, was very sparsely settled, with less than 1 inhabitant per square mile. And you remember that Live Oak County was partially in the disputed area, and that's one of the reasons for the very low population. There was very little settlement there until well after 1850. Now, both of these counties provided Confederate troops, but otherwise, in common with most inland Texas counties, both counties were very little affected by the Civil War. All right, let's take a quick look back at our questions. Why did they leave? Why did they pick Gonzales County? Well, we see one good reason was that Gonzales County was very little affected by the Civil War. But that certainly doesn't seem to be enough reason to leave home and just head cross country to a place that you know nothing about. We begin to get a hint of why they might have come to Gonzales County when we take a look at the Gonzales County marriages between 1856 and 1900. This is about a 44-year period. When we look at Bear marriages, you know, when there was the Bear immigrants, there are only two marriages with the Bear bride and groom. Seems reasonable. The Heener marriages, there were 10 Heener marriages, bride or groom. Stroman marriages, 18, bride or groom. And then we find 51 Schuler marriages. Now, a few Schulers in the migrants were all female. Where did all these Schulers come from? The answer is, they came from this fella, Job Schuler. Job was son of Daniel Schuler. He was born in 1803 in Orangeburg District. He married his second cousin, Mary Magdalene Schuler, who was the daughter of Timothy Schuler. They had 9 children, 6 of whom were born in Orangeburg District. In 1846, they decided to move to Tennessee, where they moved to Haywood County. They had 2 more children in Haywood County. About 1852, their oldest son moved to Texas, where he became a school teacher in Caldwell County. He was so impressed with Texas that he wrote his father suggesting that he sell his farm in Tennessee and move to Texas. And in 1854, Job Schuler and his family moved to Caldwell County, Texas, near Lockhart. There, a final child was born to them. In 1866, they moved across the county line to Gonzales County, Texas. Caldwell County and Gonzales County are adjacent counties in Texas. It was the connection between Job Schuler and our migrant families. This is a simplified descendant chart of 2 Schuler families. We see over here the Job Schuler family was in Texas by 1854. We also see that Job's wife, Mary Magdalene Schuler, was the sister of Margaret Schuler, who was the wife of Green Bobo and incidentally the mother of Penny Bobo and his siblings. So we see that the Bobo siblings were interested in Gonzales County, Texas, because they already had family there. They had an aunt, they had an uncle, and they had multiple first cousins, all of whom who had settled in Texas by 1854, had been there for almost 13 years, and were well settled and ready to provide advice to our 1867 migrants. So now we can finally answer all of our questions. They decided to move to Gonzales County, Texas, because 1, it was little affected by the Civil War, and 2, they already had extended family in place in the Job Schuler family to provide encouragement and advice on how best to settle into Texas. They traveled by sea because there was much post-war competition and cheap fares. It was the easiest and simplest way to go. They really did use covered wagons, and they arrived in Indianola because it was the closest port to Central Texas and Gonzales County, and at the time, Indianola rivaled Galveston as the main Texas port. So now that we've answered all of our questions, let's see how these families fared in Texas. We'll start with the Bear family. James Bear and his wife, Amaryllis, and their one-year-old son, George, we know were in Gonzales County by 1868. In 1876, Amaryllis died, and she's buried in Coal Valley Cemetery. The 1880 Gonzales County census shows James G. Bear, sons George, 12, Lee, 11, Warren, 5, and daughter Murdy, 7, and his mother-in-law, Barbara A. Schuler, who was obviously helping him with the children. Now, James Bear died 1894 and is buried in Coal Valley Cemetery with his wife. Their children, Lee, Murdy, and Warren, were all married by 1900. Unfortunately, by 1900, son George was listed as a patient in the Southwestern Institute for the Insane. Next, we'll look at the Bobos, or at least the first portion of the Bobos. Penny Bobo, his wife Mary Ann Heener, children Manning 16, Pauline 14, Jacob 12, and Augusta 6 were all in Live Oak County by 1870 from the census. In 1873, Pauline married cattle rancher James Mills. By 1880, Manning was raising cattle with his brother-in-law, and Jacob and Augustus were farming with their father. Penny Bobo died in 1900. Mary Ann died in 1902. Both are buried in the Oakville Cemetery in Oakville, Texas. Young Schuler Bobo, his wife Rebecca Strowman, and their child Franklin, 16, were living in Gonzales County about 1870. Apparently, Gonzales County did not satisfy young Bobo, and by 1880, Young and Rebecca were living in Hemp Hill, Arkansas. Franklin was also living there, and he was married with one child. Young died 15 August 1895 and is buried in Holly Springs Cemetery in Hempstead County, Arkansas. After Young's death, Rebecca returned to Orangeburg, where she died 13 April 1921. Rebecca is buried in Shiloh Cemetery near Bowman. Next, we'll look at the Heeners. William Barnett Heener, his wife, Elfar, and children Emma, 16, Young, 14, Margaret, 13, Catherine, 11, and Theodosia, 6, were in Gonzales County by 1868. Shortly after they arrived, Emma married Ellis Moore Schuler, who was the son of Job Schuler. Barnett Heener didn't get along very well with farming. And in an 1879 letter to his brother, Henry Wesley Heener, Barnett advises that it is the driest year he has ever seen in Texas. Horses and cattle are dying for lack of water and grass. He states that he sold his farm because one old man can't make much farming by himself. He says that he is running a boarding house in San Antonio at the end of the new railroad to Galveston. And finally, can his brother send money? Barnett died in 1881 from complications of gallbladder surgery and was buried in San Antonio City Cemetery No. 1. Elfar returned to Gonzales County, where she died in 1892 and was buried in Leesville Cemetery. Their son, young Jacob Heener, became a sewing machine agent. He married Mary Davis on 4 July 1875, and they had two children. Mary died in 1879, and according to family lore, she was buried in an isolated place near Beebe, Texas. Young married Electa Beck on 17 November 1880, and they had 11 children. So Young is basically the progenitor of all the Heeners in Texas. Electa died in 1925. Young died in 1932. Both are buried in the Brenner Cemetery in Guadalupe County, Texas. Now let's talk about the Schulers. The six sons of Job and Mary Schuler all married in Gonzales County between 1856 and 1874. It's these marriages, plus marriages of their children, that count toward the 51 Schuler marriages in Gonzales County. All of these sons lived in Caldwell and Gonzales counties. All of these sons had large families of 4 to 8 children each. Job Schuler died in 1878. Mary Schuler died in 1897. Both are buried in the Schuler Cemetery in Gonzales County. Their son George W. Schuler and his wife Sarah Conley are also buried there. And finally, let's look at the Strowmans. Joshua Strowman and his wife Omnellicent Bobo, their children Francis 14, Govan 12, Anna 11, Alice 10, William 8, James 7, Mary 5, and Hampton 2, were in Gonzales County before 1870. Two more children, Margaret and Rosalind, were born in Texas. And this is where all those 18 Strowman marriages came from. Omnellicent died 23rd April 1895. Joshua died in 1900. Both are buried in the Strowman Cemetery in Gonzales County. That concludes this presentation on the 1867 migration of 7 Orangeburg District families to Gonzales County, Texas. For further information, particularly on Texas, I can recommend the Handbook of Texas online by the Texas State Historical Association. This will tell you almost anything you want to know about Texas history. For additional information on the old port of Indianola, Texas, I can recommend Indianola, Texas, Queen City of the West. That's a website, www.indianolatx.com. For further information on Charles Morgan and his impact on Southern transportation, I can recommend James P. Bowman's Charles Morgan and the Development of Southern Transportation. Thank you, and good day.